Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Yellow submarine. And we will march till 3 the day to see them gathered there. From Land o' Groats to John o' Green, with Stepney do we tread. To see us yellow submarine. We love it.
In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea. And he told us of his life in the land of submarines.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus. Our research assistant and executive producer is Laura Kortner, and our engineer is Jake Bryant. Did you hear that rare recording of Ringo Starr's spoken word introduction to the Yellow Submarine song? That little spoken word clip about hiking from the northern tip of England to the southern ended up on the editing floor for the album Revolver, but resurfaced in the 1990s for the Beatles anthology project. And speaking of resurfacing, you may have heard the news that the Walt Disney Company has green-lighted the project to remake this, one of my favorite films, The Beatles' Yellow Submarine. Long-time listeners to 21st Century Radio know that I wrote the first book about the making of this classic film, and it was published in 2002, called Inside the Yellow Submarine. As soon as that book hit the shelves around the world, I started receiving phone calls and emails from many of the animators and painters who worked on this film, but that I had not located before the book went to press. Now that Disney plans to release and update this movie, we have decided what better time to do the same thing with our book. We will update our book by adding the interviews with co-creators we discovered after the publication of the first edition, and we will revise it to make it a whole new book, hopefully in time to be released together with a new movie. You can expect to hear a number of new Yellow Submarine interviews between now and then as we gather up some of those long-delayed interviews for our book project. Joining us this hour is David Elvin, who worked as a background artist on the original Yellow Submarine. Elvin remembers his days on this party-like atmosphere of a set with great fondness. There was so much to do and so little time, he says that although he was hired as a background artist, when the cameras were waiting for those cells, it was all hands on deck and anyone who could be spared became a cell painter. David Elvin was trained at the School of Art and Design in Essex and then at St. Martin's School of Art and Design in London. After leaving St. Martin's in 1964, he started work as a background artist at Hallison Batchelor, London's leading animation studio. There he worked with many of the same people who would later work on The Yellow Submarine. In 1967, he became freelance and joined the production team on Yellow Submarine. Since then, he has continued to work in the industry for over 40 years with screen credits and direction, storyboard, layout, backgrounds, and overseas supervision. He's produced commercials, promos, and titles, including videos for U2 and title sequences for the Inspector Clouseau films. He has also spent 10 years teaching animation at Southeast Essex College of Art and Technology and has been a visiting lecturer at Norwich and Bournemouth Art Schools. He is also a musician playing banjo, 6 and 12 string guitars, kazoo, banjolele, harmonica, and singing vocals with his band Ruckus Juice and Chitlins. The band specializes in old-timey, good-time jazz, jug, and skiffle music, and they were recently awarded a recording contract. We plan to bring him on the air again next year when their album comes out to find out if he was able to combine their bluegrass music with his Yellow Sub influences and create that new genre of music he promised us, Blue Meanie Grass Music. But first, tune in on some of his memories of working on the Beatles' animated classic, Yellow Submarine. Oh, welcome to 21st Century Radio, David Elvin. This is a great joy for us to be able to go back into what was this amazing production of the Beatles' Yellow Submarine film. And thank you for joining us. What were you doing before Yellow Submarine?
I was working for an animation company called Harrison Batchelor.
Oh, yeah.
Who were in the other corner of Soho Square. Not that I knew that I was going to move across the square for my next job, but Harrison Batchelor were probably the biggest animation company in London after the war. And I got a job there in 65, 66 as a trainee background artist.
What were your first impressions when you got on this project?
I suppose it was very pleased that I was hired, and it looked like it was going to be a very interesting project, and there were a lot of people that I knew and had worked with before that were on it, and so I was looking forward to a happy time.
How old were you then?
I was born in 1943.
Hey, so we're the same age.
Bob, this is wonderful.
What, to have the same age, right?
You've got all the hair.
Well, what's left of it, yeah. That's right. 1943, when we came into this planet, when World War II was fully ablaze, and it did not... That was the turning point.
I was born in the middle of an air raid.
That's right. I remember seeing you there.
Yeah. As soon as I was born, I had to be taken from my mother and put right in the basement of the hospital to get protection from the bombs.
What month were you born?
June,
okay. So you're a Gemini mostly?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so when you and I were coming into the world, we changed the World War II. I thought maybe they enlisted you right away as you came in, because they said, here's a guy we know that can get stuff done.
Yeah,
if he can work on the Yellow Submarine crew, he can win this war for us. When you got together with the group of other artists working on this amazing production of the Beatles' Yellow Submarine film, did you know any of the other guys?
Yes, I know a lot of them. Yeah, we had a lot of us moved across the square.
Mm-hmm. Could you name a few guys or girls?
I worked with Rich Cox and Cam Ford, Gordon Harrison, Jack Daniels, Ted Lewis, Dennis Hunt, I could hear.
My
Arthur
God.
Anderson,
that's half
Jolly,
the crew.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good number of the crew.
Yeah, all of those worked with Harrison Batchelor as well. As I said, mm-hmm. they were the biggest animation company in England, so almost everybody went through them anyway at some time in their career.
What were you supposed to do when you first got on the film?
Yes, I was working immediately, and Alison DeVere had a background, said, right, you do this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the first thing I was doing was either Pepperland landscapes or submarine interiors.
Mm-hmm. I loved her wallpaper.
Yeah, that was sticking down the wallpaper.
She was really something. She really was. Tell us what you can remember about working with Jack Stokes or Bob Balser or Heinz Edelman or Charlie Jenkins. Actually, there's too many people here. Well, let's start with Jack Stokes.
I worked that much on Jack's sequences. Probably had more interaction with Bob.
Mm-hmm.
But to say my main source of who handed me the work to do was Alison, and the people that I would check what I was doing with or had a query that I was doing with would be Heinz or with Alison.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I don't really... because obviously they were... I was only a background artist. Only, but I was a background artist, whereas they were animation directors, and obviously their strengths were in getting the animators to mm-hmm. produce the stuff rather than the background artists.
Well, Heinz was Alison was directly under Heinz, and they seem to have gotten along really well.
Yeah, sure.
That really made a heck of a difference for Heinz,
yeah.
because he had enough problems. When you don't have a script, you got a few problems to work out there. Who do you believe? I've mentioned a lot of people here, but who else was instrumental to your, from your standpoint, in making this film as good as it was?
Well, one person who doesn't really get a mention is a guy called John Kramer.
John Kramer.
And he was the guy who actually designed the Yellow Submarine. Heinz didn't design that. John did.
Okay, John Kramer designed the Yellow Submarine.
Yeah, that is his, John Kramer's design.
That's really very interesting because some of the early designs on the Yellow Submarine I saw had a P on it somewhere up there near the conning mast or
something. That's right, yeah.
And I couldn't figure it out for all in the world What did that P mean?
Well, maybe it meant Pepperland.
Well, hey, of course. You've just won a free trip to Bermuda
and
a couple of Rolls Royces there. I mean, of course, it was so obvious. Yeah. So John Kramer came up with that design.
Yeah, he was a sort of secondary designer working along with Hines, but he was doing other stuff as well. As obviously, the main look of the film is Hines with the Charlie Jenkins and the Bill Saul inserts and things as well. But John was had been a designer with TVC for quite a few years before then, so he was on board as well.
Mm-hmm. What sections of the sub did you work on the most?
Well, the most sort of general themes and scenery, like Pepperland and sub interiors, we all our background artists, we all produced those. But there were a couple of areas that I did. I did all the interiors of the band stage.
Oh, interiors.
That's all down to me. And I also did Ringo's room in the at the beginning of the film, when they actually go into Ringo's house. George goes in, and we see all those statues of superheroes and other stars and comic book characters. That's all my work.
Who picked the superheroes? Was that Hines?
No, that was all down to me. I could have a free reign on that.
You picked the superheroes?
I picked the Buffalo Bill and that, but the Phantom had to be there at the insistence of King Features.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was their baby.
I believe he probably still is one of their properties.
Yes. But most of the others were yours.
Yeah, well, it was my. I did say, you know, how about so and so? How about? And I said, yeah, fine.
Mm-hmm.
Fine.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly, we were working on the production in general, and obviously we moved on to each and every piece that we had to when it needed to be done. But those were the two which I just mentioned, the two specific things that I got worked on. I also did the. The background sequence for the Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds bit, but that was working with Bill Saul.
We're going to take a break now.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Okay.
Our guest is David Elvin, the background artist on the original Beatles Yellow Submarine film. When we come back, we will hear about the famous Dog and Duck Pub in Soho, London, where all the animation artists hung out in the 1960s. This is 21st Century Radio, and I'm your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus. If you're a business owner or executive seeking growth yet determined to cut wasteful costs, consider outsourcing your whole marketing department to The Selling Well. The Selling Well offers businesses truly superior marketing services without all the overhead costs associated with employing a full-time marketing executive. Learn more online at thesellingwell.com. That's thesellingwell.com, named after one of our greatest symbols of prosperity, the well. Visit thesellingwell.com or call The Selling Well's managing partner, Plato Hieronymus, at 443-939-1890. TheSellingWell.com. Have you bought a copy of Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol yet? It's a must-read for all listeners to 21st Century Radio. Not only does the plot involve all the latest discoveries and consciousness research we've been reporting on for the past 21 years, but, of course, it also relies heavily on the research in my two most recent books, Founding Fathers, Secret Societies, and The United Symbolism of America. As a matter of fact, right now, my book is being displayed right next to Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol in all Barnes & Noble and Borders across the country. They are selling so well that we are going into new printings. Please support your local bookstores and go buy copies of my books and Dan Brown's new blockbuster from the brick and mortar stores.
Hello, this is Lou Harrison, sister of former Beatle George Harrison, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus. Cheerio. To be
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. We're listening to an interview we recorded recently with David Elvin, who was a background artist on the original Beatles' Yellow Submarine film. David's wife, Lucy, also worked on the Yellow Submarine in the trace and paint department, where all the pretty young girls supposedly worked. And it is in her honor that we just played that little clip about the beautiful people from Baby, You're a Rich Man. David Elvin was telling us more about Billy Sewell, the creator of Lucy in the Sky with Diamond Sequins, remembering that Bill liked to drink very strong beer in the Dog and Duck, the pub where all London's animators hung out. I asked him to elaborate.
To drink in the Dog and Duck, which was the sort of the main pub for their production.
Oh, the Dog and Duck is a legend in itself. Does it still exist today?
Oh, yeah, it's still there.
I've even heard it referred to in a Monty Python film.
Oh, right.
The Dog and Duck.
Well, the Dog and Duck is not that an unusual name for a pub in England, so it may not. There may be more than one Dog and Duck.
Oh.
The Dog and Duck for a long, long time was the animation pub in Soho. You'd see all sorts of animators. Because Richard Williams had a studio in the Soho Square as well.
Oh, no wonder. Well, the Dog and Duck, was it a... Cost-wise, was it like in the a less expensive place or a moderately expensive place? Or
it's just a pub. The prices there were the same, more or less, of all the other pubs in Soho. We didn't go there because it was cheap. I think we went there because it was small and we could just about fill it up with animators, if that's all the company you wanted.
Was that the upstairs? You went to upstairs?
There was an upstairs, but we rarely went up there. We used to refresh ourselves there for a quick one at lunchtime before we got back to the job, or we used to go there after finishing in the evening.
Do you remember anything about the owners?
Yes, there were two brothers called the Jones brothers. One called George, who was an ex-boxer, and there used to be a picture of him flat out on the canvas. Is good, and his brother Peter was the guy who actually ran the pub, and he was featured in Yellow Sub. I'm sure you know that.
Yeah.
With his little dog Scrumpy, which was the pub dog, and his brother George is trying to get out of the telephone box in that little sequence.
That was a fascinating sequence. I always wondered how Charlie Jenkins did that until he explained it to us. Sometimes accidents really make a very big difference in how things go.
It's the joy of going into a pub. You never know what's going to come into your mind when you leave the pub, you see. So obviously maybe Charlie was inspired. I don't know if he was drinking Triple A's like Bill Sewell, but obviously he thought that the Jones brothers ought to be a part of it.
Well, as remarkable as it sounds, this movie was made without an official finished script. Now, I know Al Brodax will say that's not true.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anybody that worked on this film that would agree with him. Because if there was a script, then there wouldn't have been as many problems as they had. And they wouldn't have had as many writers. I purchased something like about four or five different scripts. Basically because I wanted to see the history of its writing, but as we all found out, it was basically with the artists themselves that made the difference, not any written script. From your perspective, when you were working, were you aware that the lack of script might affect the work, or did it affect your work, or did you not know about that?
I can answer that very easily. No. The work was always flowing. It was more work than you could handle in a decent day, and it just came through. And I was completely unaware whether this actually was part of some plan, some script, or not. I was just given the work and just got on with it. So that I had no idea that the script was so flaky, if it existed at all.
Yeah, I think that's one of the good jobs that John Coates and others did in knowing that they were in a terrible situation and did not want to lay all of that on everybody else. It certainly would have been difficult to keep up your energy on something that you said, this thing may die before we get started here. And you got to look out for your future work. I mean, if this was going to bomb, and it could have bombed early on, then where were you going to get your next job?
Yeah, that's right. I'll reiterate what I said earlier. That I think it was John at the top that allowed, even though he could be staring disaster in the face, he didn't let that out to the crew at large, you know. So we were unaware.
Yeah, well, I think that was a great strength, and I think that was the right thing to do, and he was the right man to do it. I don't know too many other people that
I'll agree with that
like that. Now, to your daily routine work, what was that like? What time you came in and
Yeah, well,
like
I was living at back with my parents for various reasons at the time I started. So I used to catch a train from where they lived at a place called Leon C. And about 40 minutes later, I used to get out in the city of London, and then you get four tube stops to Tottenham Court Road, and then just round the corner from Tottenham Court Road was the Soho Square studio.
Did it matter what time you got in?
Reasonably. I mean, some people abuse the privilege, but I had the routine, so I usually got in, I suppose, about 9-ish, maybe, 9:15, something like that. And of course, you never left at the same time, because there's always things to do. Or a visit to the Dog and Duck.
Oh, of course, got to go to the Dog and Duck. Yeah. Did they ever serve anything else besides alcohol there? Did they sell coffee and stuff? Tea?
You could get, you probably get coffee, but they sold some sort of food of a sort at lunchtimes, you know. But in the evenings, very few pubs in London in those days sold food in the evening.
So you get there somewhere around 9, give or take 10, 15 minutes. And,
and then
got your assignment, or you already knew what your assignment was?
Yeah, well, no, obviously you had several layouts given to you in one go, so you had to work your way through that.
And then you worked till about 5 or 6 or later?
Usually 6 or gone 6, usually 6 or 7.
Now some say that they even slept there overnight.
Well, that happened in the trace and paint department. That was a 24-hour party, really.
Yeah, I see. Did you work at Knightbridge?
Knightway House.
Knighthouse.
Yeah, which was owned by one of our canned food companies at the time called Cross and Blackwall. It was known as the Cross and Blackwall building.
Oh, yes, I've seen that label.
Yeah, and they were there on the first two floors. Then we had the rest of the building.
So did you work continuously from September of 67 to June of 68?
Yeah, I worked on a little later because after everybody had gone and the film was almost finished, Ted Lewis and I were paid to hang around just to tidy up any bits and pieces that maybe had to be redone or had been overlooked and all that sort of thing. We were there sort of as the troubleshooters and tidy uppers.
Well, that needed a lot of tidying up, I understand.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was...
Well, we tidied up very quickly as well, as you can, as I'm sure you know, that the end is suddenly upon us.
Yes, yeah, and I remember specifically Hines saying all of a sudden they realized they didn't have a good ending, or the ending wasn't what everyone expected. And then Hey Bulldog got taken out, et cetera, and then put back in later on, which we'll talk about later on.
Yeah, well, yes, okay, yeah, we'll talk about that later. But it was a quick ending, but say Ted Lewis and I were the last, I think, two hard artists to leave the building, and I think we left in July.
Is Ted Lewis still alive?
No, he's not. No,
wow.
I mean, his biggest claim to fame is nothing to do with Yellow Submarine. Well, Ted was one of my best friends, and we got to know and like each other working at Harrison Bachelor. And Ted, as well as being a fantastic pianist and a wonderful artist, was also a writer. And what he really wanted to do was to write.
Oh,
and he kept on writing and having books returned and all that, you know, at the same time as keeping a job down at Harrison Bachelor. And I think it might have even been on Yellow Sub when actually I think he's got his second book published, which was a book called Jack's Return Home, which
Jack's.
Is a story about a gangster who leaves London and goes back to avenge the death of his brother.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that sounds familiar, but it got turned into a film called Get Carter.
Oh, well, I'll be. Oh,
yeah.
Gosh. So he did see some part of his writing work succeed?
Oh, yeah. No, but as soon as that happened, he left animation and started writing, and that's what he was going to do for the rest of his life, which he did. But unfortunately, his life was very short. I can't quite remember the day that he died, but it was not long after he really had, was enjoying the fruits of his success.
Mm-hmm. Well, Glad he got some of it. How would you describe the atmosphere on the set of The Yellow Submarine?
It was basically good. Basically good. And so the trace and paint department was could almost be like a 24-hour party. Always music going and, and some dancing in between, waiting for cells to come in to be painted and things. And it was, yeah, it was
so it sounds
24 hours a day. There would be different shifts of people coming in to do the painting and the tracing.
So it sounds like it was a lot different than other animation projects you worked on before or since?
Yeah, it was. Obviously, it was the biggest production I've worked on, but that sort of thing didn't go on at the Harrison Bachelor Studio.
There was more like a... Harrison Bachelor always seemed to me to be a real classical type of outfit.
Yeah, well, John Harris was a Hungarian who ended up in London, and his love was classical painting.
Oh, I see. And I guess that's the reason why.
Sometimes quite wonder why he actually got involved in animation and with the wacky aspects of it. But he was, as I mentioned earlier, he was the driving force behind animation after the war. He made a feature film called Animal Farm, which was quite famous in its day. And he liked to do things like animated versions of Gilbert and Sullivan operas and things.
Yeah.
So he also made a lot of commercials, made him a lot of money.
But one of the most common myths about the Yellow Submarine, and there's a lot of them, is that it was an invitation to take LSD because the artists must have all been drug-using hippies. I hear this all the time here in America, of course. People lecture me on this, you know. They do. And I ask them, have you ever talked to any of the guys? Well, no, but we all know that.
Well, I think the only LSD that we took was what used to be called pounds, shillings, and pence, which was what LSD was the original initials for, was for money. We took that, but I don't think there was much drug taking there. The choice was either nicotine or alcohol, I think.
Yeah.
As far as I was aware, I mean, there might be a few people had a reefer now and then, but it certainly wasn't common.
So you would perhaps would agree with this statement. This statement being, I heard from other co-creators that there was a great deal of alcohol being consumed by professionals, but none of them were using drugs, and any drug taking was reserved for the art students bust in overnight to fill in the colors. Does that sound accurate?
I only did a few all-nighters, and on the times that I was there, I wasn't aware of that. But there again, they were in a different part of the building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they could have been. But you can smell that smell, and I never smelt that smell anywhere in the building at any time.
Now, in regards to the film itself, what are your favorite sequences in the film?
I don't know. It's pretty good all through. I mean, it's the fact that it can suddenly change. It's the whole look is another interesting aspect of the movie.
A lot of people have said that the certain aspects of the way Liverpool was done, or the part where they weren't so happy about was the ending. Because this film has been loved by many American animation artists because they think it's like an encyclopedia of different types of animation that absolutely thrilled them from that standpoint. There were great differences between the way Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds was done and Hey Bulldog or the Liverpool sequences and things like that. Was there any area of that types of different type of animation that you preferred over others?
It may sound like a cop out answer, but no, I think the film works really well as a whole, and the fact that it's got those different looking sequences in it just adds to the joy of the movie. I suppose when the Charlie Jenkins thing first comes in, that's a good impact when those all those chimneys blow at the same time. Anything that is different.
Yeah.
And then when the Lucy in the Sky sequence, that's great as well, and that's different. But then we go back to what could be described as normal, and then we move on. No. So I'm just saying that overall I think it works very well. I mean, you could start saying, well, this could have been better animated, or that could have been better staged, or the timing on this bit is not quite right. But anybody can pick anything to pick if they want to. But overall, I still think as a piece of work, that's fine as a piece of work.
I'll say. I don't think we could do it today. Did you have difficulty moving any of the Heinz Edelman designs?
Well, no, I'm not an animator, so I didn't.
Oh, that's right. You were going background, a lot of the background, so you didn't have to worry about that part.
No. The layouts were pretty good, and if you got a good layout, then you can make a good background into that. I mean, they were a lot more detailed. I can remember it, going back to the Hallis and Bachelor thing, the animator who used to do the layouts for the backgrounds, and he just put the horizon line in and put sky, ground, and an arrow pointing rock, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No sort of instruction whatsoever, but as far as I can recall, most of the layouts for the backgrounds on Yellow Sabre had all the information you needed to make a good background from.
Time for a break on 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus, and we're listening to an interview with David Elvin, which we recorded a few days ago. David Elvin is one of the background artists on the original Beatles' Yellow Submarine. I say original because Disney and director Robert Zemeckis have announced plans to remake this classic film and release it in time for the 2012 Summer Olympics in London. We'll find out what David Elvin thinks of that idea after we return from these messages.
Because the wind is high, it blows my mind. Because the wind is high.
It's holiday time.
6:30 a.m. until 8. Only on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Next week on 21st Century Radio, Queen Zahara will join me again this week on 21st Century Radio for a collection of news stories on the mysteries of life, plus more Baltimore holiday memories from all sides of the track. Sunday night at 8, 21st Century Radio, Talk Radio 680 WCBM. American history has been characterized by single moments that have defined movements. Now, with only 10% of blind children learning Braille in school, the time for a new defining moment is upon us. Join the NFB for a very special moment in the Braille literacy movement as we launch the 2009 Lewis Braille Bicentennial Silver Dollar. Funds from the sale of the coin go to the National Federation of the Blind to develop and implement effective programs to increase Braille literacy among blind children and adults. For more information, visit www.braille.org. www.braille.org.
You're listening to Bob Hieronymus on 21st Century Radio, and I hope you enjoy the show. And this is John Clyde, who once had the pleasure of playing John Lennon in Yellow Submarine. I hope you enjoy this from a good friend of Bob Hieronymus.
Hey, Ringo, I've just had the strangest dream.
I warned you not to eat on an empty stomach. I'll listen to old Fred.
I'm a guitar monkey. Music of the countdown. Found the submarine. Explosions of blue meanies. What do you think?
I think it needs a rehearsal.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. We're listening to an interview we recorded recently with David Elvin, who was a background artist on the original Beatles' Yellow Submarine film. David is half of one of the several romance stories that blossomed on the set of the Yellow Submarine. Still married to his wife Lucy since 1970, he told us how he got her a job on the Yellow Sub crew, even though she had never worked in animation before. But we talked to Cam and Diana Ford of one of several couples who worked together on the set and later married. Were you aware of any other couples meeting and marrying on the set of the Yellow Submarine? I believe you did. But you knew your wife before this, long before this, right?
No, I had my girlfriend was working on the Yellow Submarine. Who actually I managed to arrange an interview for her job and she got picked to work. But we weren't actually married until 1970.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you know of any other couples that met and married there on the set? Brodax thinks there are over a dozen. I don't know if there are any.
Maybe, but it wasn't me.
Mm-hmm.
There certainly were some bumps starting to arrive in one or two of the ladies, but... put it this way, if there were weddings, I wasn't invited, so...
Could you tell us more about how you got your girlfriend the job?
She was a tracer for the post office, mm-hmm. which was the technical drawing office. But, you know, she didn't like it that much. And I said, well, you might better get a job tracing on this film I just started. So she said she'd be interested. So I had a word with Pete, whatever his name. He said, oh, we'll give her an interview and a test. She came in for an interview and a test. And I rang up about two or three days later and said, yes, you got the job. Start tomorrow.
And she hadn't worked in animation before?
No, she hadn't.
Did she continue any work in animation
after
that?
Oh, yes, she did, until trace and painting stopped, really. So,
when was that?
Well, there are still a few people, I think, it's still actually trace and paint cells, but I mean, generally it must be, what, 15 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the tracing stopped first because everything was starting to be Xerox, wasn't it, onto cells?
Yeah. Did she work in the all-night department?
Oh, yeah, she was there. She did the day shift mainly. I'd say on occasions we all worked all night, but she was mainly day shift.
Has she ever related to you any interesting stories about that?
She had a good time.
Was she one of the ones that were dancing?
A very happy time of her life, I'm sure.
Oh, was she born in 1943 like us?
No, unfortunately, she wasn't. No, she was a mere child.
She missed the good times.
That nice Mr. Hitler stopped dropping bombs on us before she came out.
Well, they knew what they're in for after that, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, they missed us, so that's it. You know.
What happened? What did you do after Yellow Submarine?
Went on for a long holiday.
Lucky you.
Yeah, down in Cornwall, which is in the west of England, and bummed around there, playing music and having some sun and all that sort of thing. And then I went back to work. The first big job was working on the Jackson 5 with Bob Bolter again, the Jackson 5 series, which was a Rankin Bass House and Bachelor co-production.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then worked on other House and Bachelor things as a freelance. Tomfoolery was a show I worked on, and onwards and onwards.
What are you doing today?
Today, in animation, I've just got into partnership with Bill Melendez TV, and we're promoting a TV series that my company finished about 3 or 4 years ago, because there were still some incompetent people in our business, got something's wrong, so it didn't get a proper release, so we've now rejigged it, and we're re-releasing that and hoping to get that broadcast very soon.
I hope so.
I have a couple of projects of my own which are out there and hoping to get them to be picked up. But also, as you've mentioned, I'm doing a lot with my band, and we've just been given a recording contract, which is keeping us excited and getting us playing a lot. And maybe we could start a new sort of musical genre and call it Blue Meanie Grass.
The Blue Meanie Grass is going to be what's catching on in the year 2012. Is Zemecki going to do this in 2011 or 12?
You'll have to see my lawyers. And I'm also, sort of thing that you may be interested in, I've just been given the curatorship of a forthcoming exhibition which celebrates the area which I live in southeast England, has produced an awful lot of popular music entertainers over the years, and we're doing an exhibition to celebrate them, and I'm the curator of that. So I'm pretty busy.
When would that happen, Dave?
That's happening in April 2011.
Well, maybe we can do, what I'd love to do, is do an interview with you and the band.
Well, that'd be great.
And play your music, obviously we don't want to wait till 2011.
Hopefully the album will be finished before 2011. We're hoping to do a little bit before Christmas and then do the remainder in the new year.
Well, here we are. It's 2009, November, and Robert Zemecki is talking about doing a Disney remake of the Yellow Submarine. What would you say to him if you could, David, about this possible
I'd
remake?
Say I'm looking forward to seeing your movie, Mr. Zemecki, because I don't think it'll take anything away from what we did, and it'll be nice to see somebody else's take on it, about how they're going to do it and how they're going to approach it and how the Beatles are going to be involved. Are they really going to play original tracks? Are they recording all the music? I don't know. But there again, mentioning Ted again, the remake of Get Carter didn't really have a very good critical acclaim. So maybe Mr. Zemeckis' Yellow Sub will have the same reaction. But I'm not wishing it ill at all. When it comes out, I shall go and see it.
Well, that's pretty much what Anna Edelman told us a couple of months ago. She says, you're not going to be able to stop this.
No.
It's going to happen, and if it's good, it's good for the animation version. If it's bad, it's good for the animation.
Absolutely.
It's a no-lose
It won't take anything away from our film. And as I say, I will go and see it when it's released.
What would you like to see him do or avoid in the remake?
Obviously, I'd like to see him have a complete fresh. I don't think he would even attempt to rehash what's there. I think he has to have a fresh. I mean, his films are good, so I mean, it could be interesting. I don't think it'll have much in common with the original, but let's just wait and see.
I think it would be good if there were any special acknowledgement of the original crew and ideas.
Well, that would be nice, but I don't think that's a priority, really.
Well, it's a
It all depends on his take on it and how he goes about it and how much. Whether he's just taking the name and the Beatles and doing a completely new film, or whether he's doing a homage, large or small, to the original. I don't know. I think questions like that will be answered after I've seen it.
Well, that's what we're attempting to do right now, to get through to his people and him through other people that we know in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And so that at least he has some kind of recognition. What we want to see is some kind of recognition of the crew that originally made the film, and it doesn't mean that they have to affect what he's doing at all, but at least recognize the fact that, and many of these individuals were not originally acknowledged years ago, and even though in 1999 a few more were, but certainly not as many that should.
That's right, and they all should have an acknowledgement saying something like, thanks for the inspiration, guys, or something like that.
Yeah, I think, and that's what we're trying to arrange, and that's why we're starting right now. We've already sent materials on to him. We are trying to desperately make sure they really do get in his hands and not somebody else who might feel that we're trying to impinge on any of his artistic freedom, because we're not. We just want to make sure that he is aware that some of the crew is still alive, and it would be nice to acknowledge them and have you guys come to a special screening to see it.
That will be good. Yeah.
Well, that is our goal, and we know that by working on it, and working especially with artists is a great love of mine, because it's just wonderful to be surrounded by people that are more brilliant than you are, and who have the consciousness to know that art elevates awareness, consciousness brings people together, so that eventually we will become, as corny and as naive as it sounds, one people on one planet, and then at that time maybe we won't have any more wars. Yes, I know, naive.
As Bill Sewell would say, I'll definitely drink to that.
Well, so will I, and we'll have a couple of them on that. I just have great admiration for artists who do the impossible. And what you guys did really was more impossible than you thought, because...
Yeah, it probably was. We didn't quite realize how close we were to the whole thing imploding. But
yeah.
We got through it, and we made a good film.
David, thank you ever so much.
been an absolute pleasure.
It's going to take a while for us to keep working on this, and when, as soon as we start to hear from Zemecki's people, if we do, but we will eventually. We will eventually.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll respect these ideas.
Yep.
It's one of those ways of trying to get through. Had I known them personally, I think all of us would have been able to. We wouldn't have had to convince them, but I think we gotta sell this to them so that they'll think it's good enough. Because I think that if they had this gathering for the guys that created the original Yellow Submarine film, that it would affect the public in such a positive way towards them that it would break down most of the negativity that they're now had been facing on the internet, saying, who in the hell do they, you know, someone saying, who in the hell do they think they are?
Yeah.
What is going on here? They should leave this thing alone, et cetera, et cetera. David, this has been wonderful.
Yes, it's been terrific. Thank you, Dr. Bob.
Thank you, sir.
Anytime, you know, well, you got my phone number. So
yeah, I'll call you tomorrow morning at 4 a.m.
I look forward to that.
God bless you, sir.
And you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, we have a few minutes remaining in this hour, so I'm going to read you a little note from David's wife, Lucy Elvin, who was unfortunately not able to join us on the phone the other day for this interview. Lucy remembers the producer of The Yellow Submarine, John Coates, as an utterly charming man, but said that he always had a rather satisfied smile on his face as he surveyed the scene in the trace and paint department. As she put it, quote, "We were, after all, the beautiful people. Even the men were beautiful, as I recall. This was the late 60s, when skirts were really short and hair on both sexes pretty long. It was a trendy place to be, and most of the workers on the Yellow Sub reflected the current and colorful fashions. While working on Yellow Sub, I was asked to pose for some photographs by an American photographer. I had to pretend to be editing by holding some footage up to the light while biting it after 4 or 5 photos were taken. But I never saw them until one of me popped up in an article on the Yellow Submarine in Mojo magazine in October 1999. The atmosphere of Yellow Sub generally was one of flourishing and enjoyable creativity. What could be better than working on a film starring one's idols in an exciting location in the center of Soho in the late 60s? And that's an end quote by Lucy Elvin, tracer and painter on the Yellow Sub. And you heard me earlier this hour referring to the remake plans by director Robert Zemecki and the Walt Disney Company. When this news to remake Yellow Submarine was first announced, the fan furor was mostly quite negative. After reflection, however, some people have formed new opinions and are looking forward to the new version with anticipation. Here's one of those more colorful comments that we've collected in the past several weeks. Animator Cam Ford was at first quite skeptical of the idea, but then warmed to it upon reflection, as he says in this letter he sent to Robert Zemecki and copied to us. He noted that, so with for what it's worth, here's my suggestion. Don't just attempt to recycle the old Yellow Submarine story, characters, situations, and songs, because it won't work. Why not make a completely new film, a knock-your-socks-off sequel to the original, with the animated Beatles encountering wild new adventures, zany villains, and oddball allies in a totally different and inventive eye-popping art style more suited to today's 3D technology. Take us along with the old Fred and the Beatles on a new voyage in the submarine and make the film your own creation, and I guarantee it will be received with far more interest than a simple retread of the original. I'd certainly like to see it. And so would I. See you next week on 21st Century Radio.
Live in a yellow submarine. Yellow submarine. Yellow submarine.
Now, the latest from Fox News
are the most powerful names in